The Ira Kaufman Podcast is presented by Bill Curry Ford, Tampa's first family of Ford for the last 60 years. Head to BillCurryFord.com right now. See the 0% financing offers for 84 months, a special deal from Ford with deferred payments. And later in the podcast, we will be hearing from General Manager Sean Sullivan, who also happens to be our good friend, Ira's good friend, and our resident NFL draft guru.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Bucks fans, welcome back to your favorite podcast featuring the sage of Tampa Bay sports, the king of Newport Richie, the baron of Big Storm beer, Mr. Bill Curry Ford, Uncle Ira. He is Ira Kaufman. I'm Steve Isbitz of Joe Bucks Fan. Lee D. Kemper is here. Episode 2 of this week, and we are fired up to keep talking about the draft and its fallout and all the angles. Ira, how are you, man?
Guys, I just cannot believe you talk about relevance, return to relevance. It's even beyond that. Every time I turn on Pro Football Talk with Mike Florio, Good Morning Football, Get Up, the Bucks are always the topic of conversation. I mean, it's something with Brady, it's Winston leaving, it's the draft, it's Gronkowski. The Glazers have to be absolutely loving this. Even Ed out in California, he's got to be scarfing this up. He's got to be loving this. Lee, this Buck mania, it's not confined to our local region. I mean, they are the national story in the National Football League. And, Lee, it's been a long time since we can ever remember anything like this.
There's never been anything like this, and we may never see anything like this. And in a way, I hope we don't, because part of the reason the Bucks have dominated sports talk is, outside of the draft, what is there? Nothing. It took a pandemic for the Bucks to be a pandemic and a couple personnel moves with high-profile players for the Bucks to absolutely dominate sports talk. The Glazer family could deplane. You couldn't sit in a marketing classroom and come up with this scenario, how good it's been. And I know there's a pandemic out there and people are becoming sick, people are dying. That's awful. From a typical numbers standpoint, from a cold-blooded numbers standpoint, the Glazers got to be just over the moon about this.
You know, Steve, and given all the hype, and we've talked about how there's usually a lag between putting keisters in the seats and team success on the scoreboard. Steve, if the Bucks come into their home opener and there's, you know, 10,000 empty seats in the stadium, it's not going to be devastating. It's not going to wreck the franchise. But, Steve, it would certainly be disappointing if that's the case.
Ira, come on. I wouldn't be surprised if there were 20,000 empty seats in that stadium.
Well, that's not going to look good on national television, and the odds are.
If you had free tickets to an NFL game, would you go right now?
Well, it depends on what's going on. They're talking about possibly starting in October, Lee. I mean, that's a long ways away.
People are going to be paranoid about going to games for quite some time until there's a vaccine out.
In the words of Dr. Fauci, Stephen, testing, testing, testing. How do you like that, Isbitz?
Well, Ira, look, when I heard this report that the NFL might not start until October, I had to laugh. And why is it going to be safer in October than it's going to be in September or in November? It doesn't make any logical sense. If they're going to play with fans, it's going to happen in September. There's no doubt about it. If they play without fans, it'll happen in September. So, I mean, to me, that was just the goofiest thing I ever heard.
If they do the six-foot rule, there's going to be 20,000 empty seats.
Guys, part of that scenario, and I agree with Steve, I think they're going to start September 5th or whatever it is, but I've heard pushing the Super Bowl back 3 or 4 weeks now. You know, this Tampa task force, they've been working 24-7, you know, to have a certain date and have everything in place, and I guess there's enough time to readjust schedules and things, but
sure.
Let's not forget, the Super Bowl's right here in our town.
What's going on in end of February at that stadium? A tractor pull?
Well, it's not just the stadium. It's what's going on.
I know. The whole week, yeah.
Yeah, it's the convention center.
You got to have the arena for the media. And you got to, I get that. But wasn't it New Orleans after 9/11 and got pushed back a week? I mean, it cost the NFL some money, but they pulled it off.
It's messy, Ira. You know, I was watching, though. You brought up Brady. Two things I'll say about that and the hype. First of all, I just watched an interview this morning. He's on ESPN China. Thankfully, it was in English. and I was able to understand it. But
from the Wuhan Clan province.
But he's there talking to, you know, ESPN China. Nice interview for about 7 hours. He seemed to like the pretty lady who was doing the interview. You know, but I have to say, Ira, and we know that the bottom line is the Buccaneers are a bumbling, stumbling franchise in so many ways and have been for a while. Have they capitalized? Are they going to capitalize on all this hype? The hype is nice, but what do you do about it? How is it going to transform your organization on all these levels? I have yet to see anything to me that looks transformative of how they're going to capitalize on all this stuff. I'm waiting to see it. There's time, but I don't feel for a second that the Glazers are smart enough to know what to do with it.
Well, one thing you just mentioned, Lee, I think it's interesting. I have never seen Lee, and I don't believe Brady has ever been since he made, you know, the big time during that first Super Bowl before anybody ever heard of Tom Brady. Lee, I don't remember Brady. He used to lock it down in the off season. You couldn't get to the guy, and even during the season, I think he would do WEEI in Boston once a week. I think he was obligated to do it, and of course he had to do his press conferences, but he wouldn't say anything. Lee, I get the distinct impression that Brady feels absolutely liberated now that he's a Buccaneer and he's away from Foxborough and away from the hoodie. Lee, you turn on your TV, you can't get away from Brady. He's on here, he's on there, he's making news, he's involved, you know, a high-profile cheater house instead of, you know, trying to cloak where he lives. The guy's an open book right now, Lee. I don't remember Brady ever being this accessible as he is right now. I don't think it's going to stop when the season starts. He's trying to cash in with this high profile. We'll see what happens, Lee, but I just like to tamp down the enthusiasm a little bit, Lee, just a little bit. I'm not a Debbie Downer. I think the Bucs should make the playoffs. I think it'd be a travesty if they don't. But anybody who thinks it's Super Bowl or bust, and if they don't make it, the Brady experiment isn't worth it, I just think that's crazy. I mean, start with ending a 12-year playoff drought, Lee. How about starting there?
I heard you suggesting that Tom Brady should be living in Sebring or Sefner or Hudson?
Well, Hudson's lovely this time of year, Lee. Hudson's
lovely. The trailer park? But I got to be honest, Steve's got me, all squirrely here. Talking about ESPN China, and he says the woman is lovely. I don't know how he can figure that out with the wearing the mask. And would you expect an Asian version of Candy Crowley to be on ESPN China? I would suggest no. So
well, she might have looked like a young Tia Carrere. How about that one, Lee? Tia Carrere.
Hey, Lee, Lee, some guys pay good money for a woman to wear a mask.
Outstanding. That's outstanding.
You brought up something, Ira. I was going to mention to you earlier.
We should stop this podcast right now and end it with that line.
I got to mention this. I was watching some classic Stuttering John on YouTube last night. Stuttering John went to the ESPYs, and Howard Stern made sure to let everybody know that the ESPN absolutely hates Stuttering John, and Tia Carrere was one of his victims. Also, among one of his victims, I didn't get there yet because I decided, okay, I got to go to bed. This is getting late. But one of his victims, the highlights, it's like upcoming at the commercial break. One of his victims was, when's the last time you heard this name, Ira? Robert Goulet.
Oh, geez, Robert Goulet. Wasn't he married to the woman that got killed in this, Claudine Longet? I mean,
what?
I think she got killed in a skiing accident. Somebody shot her or something. I don't know. I seem to remember that.
I'm not laughing that the woman died, but she got gunned down at a ski lodge.
I think she got gunned down. Now,
Ira, that doesn't sound like an accident.
Steve, you have one wicked sense of humor, Isbits, and I love the fact that you parse it out. You don't throw it out there very often, but when you do, it cuts to the bone, Isbits. Outstanding.
All right, Ira. Enough of your nonsense. Your podcast is presented by Bill Curry Ford, Tampa's first family of Ford. Number one, first family of Ford right there on Dale Mabry Highway, just north of the stadium. Not only do they have all the incredible 0% financing offers that we talk about, but you cannot forget their nationwide lifetime warranty on new and pre-owned vehicles. And pre-owned prices are fantastic right now. They have the biggest selection in town. BillCurryFord.com is the website, BillCurryFord.com. Later, as we mentioned in a little bit of opening we had in the podcast, general manager Sean Sullivan, the guy who's going to give you the Ira Kaufman, Joe Bucks fan discount. Our NFL draft guru will be on a little bit later, breaking down sort of some X's and O's into the picks that we got, the picks we didn't get, and some of these undrafted free agents that Sean is all over, like we're not, and we're thankful for his knowledge there. And Ira, of course, Big Storm Beer. Beer, beer, beer. Summer is coming. The beaches are going to be reopening. You want to have Big Storm Beer with you at all times. Their standard, fantastic core beers are available to be seen at BigStormBrewery.com. And, of course, there you can find where to buy them at all the fine establishments and liquor stores around town. Big Storm Beer. We love the Tropic Pressure. That's Iris' favorite. The Key Lime Shandy. The Bromosa. The Tangerine IPA. Their original beer, the Wavemaker Amber Ale, and they've got so many more. BigStormBrewery.com. We'll talk more about them later. Sage, I've got to run this by you. The Buccaneers are doing virtual workouts. Okay, so OTAs started on Monday. They started classrooms, workouts, whatever. But most teams are not doing virtual workouts. Most teams, about 75% of the NFL, is just relying on the guys to work out themselves and not do some Denise Austin workout video, Richard Simmons deal with the team, and just go work out, do the best
with
they
the
can.
Short shorts?
Yeah, exactly.
The candy stripe short shorts.
Yeah, they're just relying on these guys to tell the team what they need. They'll get them equipment. They'll do whatever they got to do. But the Bucs are a team that's making these guys work out on video. Now, of course, it's all optional. But some guys have workout bonuses, and hey, if you don't show up on the computer, then you're not going to get your bonus. What's your thought about the Bucs doing that, and is this an opportunity to get Brady more involved faster? What do you think?
I think it's a fantastic opportunity for virtual gate, Lee, virtual gate. And by that I mean would not be surprised if Tom Brady isn't the mastermind in getting a little group together. He's already been thrown out of one park. I think that's going to be the first. I think that's going to be the first of many. Lee, I think it's rife for abuse. Absolutely rife for abuse. You know Brady. He can't wait to get started. He's got a whole bunch of new teammates. He's never thrown to any of these guys. He wants to get to know these guys, and I don't think he's going to be satisfied, Lee, to do it over a Skype or a Zoom. I just think coming to a park near you, people, Tom Brady and Cameron Brate and Godwin and the rest. I just think it's inevitable. Keep on the lookout. And if they're at a park, Kevin O'Donnell, of all people, will find them, Lee. He's got a way. O'Donnell knows where these guys work out. He's got contacts. He's been in this market long enough from Fox 13. Lee, I'm not buying this virtual workout stuff. I think Brady will proceed in stealth fashion, and he's going to be tripped up because somebody's going to catch him.
JPP is all over Instagram. He was working out. He had some kind of rope ladder in his yard that he was doing footwork in. I know there are some people that get off on that. I don't. But he was wearing all his Bucks T-shirt and Bucks shorts, so I don't know if that was practice mode or not. But he was all over Instagram doing that, sweating on Instagram. And then I came across Lewis Murphy had video. And it's this park a lot of Bucks go to in Tampa, Skyway Park.
Yep.
Ryan Griffin was throwing passes to DeSean Jackson.
That says it all right there, Lee. That says
so,
it all.
So, it's not just Brady that's out with a bunch of guys. It's Ryan Griffin, your number three quarterback, maybe number two. I don't know. But he was out there throwing passes to DeSean Jackson. The word you used twice, Iron, I don't know what context you're using in. You called it abuse, and I don't know what you mean by that specifically. I mean, I know what the word abuse is, but the way you used it, what's being abused? I don't know.
Well, I think sheltering in place will be abused until those.
Oh, that's out the window. Yeah, it's gone.
Until those restrictions are lifted in Hillsboro, I think they're out the window as far as Buck workouts are concerned.
Any Tampa City employee that breaks up any Bucks player working out in the park, I don't give a damn what the rules are. They should be forced to wax every Bucks player's car weekly through the season, if not clean their bathrooms. The audacity, the absolute audacity these people have.
Do you think Brady's got the patience to stay in his Davis Island mansion and communicate with these players through Zoom and Skype for the next 2 or 3 months? I don't buy it, Steve.
Well, of course, we don't know how long this shelter-in-place stuff is going to last and how that'll manifest. I mean, Brady has the money, obviously, to just go buy an empty lot somewhere in Southern Hillsborough County and say, come on out and let's play on my empty lot. No one's going to break him up on private property of, you know, six guys throwing the ball around. So hopefully somebody steps up with that kind of purchase if it comes down to that.
The first guy I'm asking out there is Keyshawn Vaughn, gentlemen, this new James White clone, so to speak. And I want Brady throwing him 120 balls a day.
All right, Sage. Now, one thing I wanted to bring up to you quickly, out of the draft, since you brought up Keyshawn Vaughn, you know, there was one trade that was made in the draft that really had my stomach turning a little bit. Matt Breida, okay, was traded to the Dolphins from the Niners for a fifth-round pick. Now, this guy, okay, now this is foreign for Buccaneers fans, but Matt Breida, over the last 3 years, 381 carries, averaging over 5 yards per carry, and he's caught more than 20 balls a year. So last year, he averaged 5.1 yards a carry, 5.3 the year before. Every year, the 3 years he's been in the league, he's busted out a long run for a touchdown. He's one of the fastest guys in the league, according to the Next Gen stats. And he was replaced by Raheem Mostert in San Francisco, and they traded him for a fifth-round pick. I don't understand why that guy, who's from right down the road in Tampa, was not worth the fifth-round pick for the Bucs. It just, I don't get it, Ira.
And don't forget, Steve, his numbers were suppressed because they operate by committee over there. Tevin Coleman's still on that team, right, Steve? I believe. And Mostert was the man in the postseason. I think the idea might be that Breida might be considered a product of a great blocking team and a great system put together by Shanahan. I'm not sure I agree with that. The kid's a good running back. You got him on the cheap with a fifth-round pick. I think adding him to the mix in Tampa would have been a wise move.
Obviously, it would have been a wise move. And, Ira, you're on to something. I read somewhere, heard somewhere, it might have been Pat Kerwin, someone with authority, NFL knowledge, that they said never trust a running back coming from a Shanahan system. And so I thought that was very interesting. And Breida, obviously, with the 49ers, his Mostert has bounced around the NFL for like 5 years.
That's right.
And,
that's right.
And he finally, when they called his number in the playoffs in the Super Bowl, he answered the bell. That's great for him. But the frustration I have, and a lot of Bucs fans have, with this Bucs team, and they're absolutely just ignoring their how they've trivialized the running back position. I just want to throw a beer bottle through a window. It just drives me bananas.
You know, and along those lines, somebody could say, well, the 49ers don't have all-pro backs, and look at all the rushing yards they gain. Steve, let's be honest. The Bucs system is not a Shanahan system in terms of maximizing your ground game. You had a very good one in Atlanta. Again, two guys sharing the load, and the year that the Falcons went to the Super Bowl and should have been Super Bowl champions, they had a heck of a rushing attack. So Shanahan is very savvy in getting these guys open. Everybody blocks in San Francisco. I mean, everybody. Kittle's a very good blocker. Debo Samuel, the receivers chip in. It's a real concerted effort to open some of these holes, and I think, like Lee's implying, outside people looking in on the 49ers, and maybe all three backs are thinking they're a product of the system, and I think that might have hurt Breida.
Ira, you said that the knock on getting an ex-Niners player is, or not a knock, but they don't have any Pro Bowl players. They don't have any Pro Bowl running backs. Well, the Bucs have no bowl running backs.
It's a problem. It's a problem now. That doesn't mean that that somebody's not going to be kicked free towards the end of training camp. It doesn't mean that. The Bucs will have to have the money to add the guy, but I still don't think they're finished in the backfield, Steve. I'm not sure they're finished.
Ira, this past season, who was the comeback player of the year in the NFL?
Well, Garoppolo was considered.
Exactly, because he wasn't there in 2018. They had no passing attack. Everybody's keyed on the running game. The team wasn't very good, and he still averaged over 5 yards a carry. when Matt Breida. I mean, he's an excellent running back. There, I have no question about it. And I think it's proven by when everybody keyed on him, he still was good. Young,
all right, fair,
crazy.
Fair point.
Crazy. It drives me nuts. Like at least said, I want to throw some Big Storm beer into the wall, but that would be too wasteful.
No.
Too
not
wasteful.
Big Storm, something else, sure. Not Big Storm. You want to enjoy Big Storm. Hey, guys, maybe there's something we're missing here in terms of this Tampa Bay backfield situation.
Competence.
Well, Light's putting a lot of stock in Ronald Jones. I mean, a lot. And thinks he's going to continue this growth curve, and there was one in year two. We have to all admit that. After a absolutely one of the worst rookie seasons I've ever seen from the running back position. You cannot average less than 2 yards a carry. That's almost impossible. Now, he didn't get a lot of carries, guys. He did not. And he was hit often in the backfield for whatever reason. And I think he's got to take some of the responsibility for that because Peyton Barber was not hitting the backfield nearly as much as Ronald Jones a couple of years ago. But, Steve, in Jason Light's world, Ronald Jones is an 1,100-yard back with good hands. I mean, could that happen?
Well, of course it could happen, and I'm not down on the new guy because I haven't seen him yet, and these third-round, fourth-round, fifth-round picks come out of nowhere all the time and do well, so I'm really not down on it, but it's frustrating that they didn't take established options, and Jones, sure, he could get better, absolutely, but why take a chance and not add more firepower and more competition? And this goes back to what you started with, Ira, and I wanted to smack you around a little bit because you're sitting there telling Bucks fans to calm down with the Super Bowl talk. This is it, Ira. We've got a 43-year-old quarterback who's probably not going to be as good when he's 44, but right now he's probably damn good. They added Gronkowski, who probably has 1 year left before he gets broken down again in reality. And they've got all their chips in the basket here. Lavonte David's not getting any younger. Sue is 34. JPP, when's the last time he played a whole year without some sort of injury dragging him down? And this is it. So, yeah, I think if you believe, Ira, that the Bucks are a playoff team, once you make those playoffs, you just got to win three or four in a row with Tom Brady as your quarterback. I am all for the Super Bowl talk, and I buy it. That's why I'm pissed that they didn't add some veteran running backs.
Well, NFL history tells us usually you got to be knocking at the door for a year or two on your way up, on the climb, just like the Chiefs when they lost that brutal AFC title game to New England when Dee Ford was offsides. You got to be on the climb, Lee, and you got to be, you know, close, and then you go over the top. Now, may I suggest the Bucks were not close in 2019. I understand they were undermined by 41 giveaways, led the league, but they got a big gap to make up on the Saints and the 49ers, and Seattle's not going anywhere. Lee, it's a big gap. And Brady's not 30 years old anymore, so make the damn playoffs, and I agree with Steve. Take your chances in January with a Tom Brady, but Super Bowl talk, Lee, I just think it's exaggerated.
It is, but I don't blame the fans for getting hyped up about this. I don't. I mean, they've been kicking the groin so many times over the years with the Mike Smiths, the Lovie Smiths. You know, they have some name players, guys that are going to go in the Hall of Fame. I don't blame the Bucks. You reference your beloved Chiefs, and I get that. But I also noticed that the very same Super Bowl the Chiefs won last year, didn't they play the 49ers, who had a pretty lousy record the previous season? I mean, I understand what you're saying, and usually and you're right, Ira, the higher percentage are teams that had made the playoffs the prior year. But there's a fair amount of teams that made the Super Bowl that were lousy the year before. Off the top of my head, I remember the first Niners Super Bowl. They played the Bengals. Both teams were garbage the year before, were they not? And that's more of an outlier. I get it, but it's not impossible. I don't blame the fans for getting hyped up and fired up and pumped up. That's what fans are. That's what you're supposed to do.
Steve, I guess what I'm saying is I look at the Bucks on defense, and I don't see a championship defense. I don't see it. I think there are depth problems in the front seven, linebacker, D-line. I don't see a lot of depth. There's going to be some injuries. Not a question of if.
You know, we'll see if the cornerbacks continue the growth curve. Look, they played better the last 6 weeks on defense. There's no question about it. But when you, you know, try to match that up with the 49er defense, that's a problem. That's a problem.
Yeah, look,
I totally agree with you, Ira, about the Brady age thing. I don't know how to say this politely, but I think that's going to be a bigger issue than anybody's discussing right now. That's like the elephant in the room. Then, you know, number two would be Gronkowski's body. Can it hold up? So I think those are absolutely legitimate issues, Ira. I really do.
Yeah, Sage, look, I'm glad Lee mentioned the 49ers getting there last year. And heck, Ira, a couple years ago, Blake Bortles is one good play from the Super Bowl. Blake Bortles.
Again, with a hellacious defense.
Right.
Again.
Well, right. But this year, the Bucs should have a hellacious offense that if they score less than 30 points a game, it's almost a failure after scoring 28.5 last year. But I don't think the defense is good enough. I'm worried about the kicker. But I have those Super Bowl dreams, Ira. You can't take them away from me. I don't care how hard you try. You can't do it.
Now, Jameis Winston is officially a member of the New Orleans Saints. One of their executives, Lee, is shooting his mouth off and already talking about how he's going to learn more from Sean Payton and Drew Brees than he ever has in his life. I mean, isn't that a little shot at Bruce Arians, Lee?
Maybe cutter than Arians, but I see where you're coming from. I'll let Steve talk about Peyton Manning's quotes recently about his former beloved coach.
Yeah, that's Jeff Ireland, the assistant GM. And yeah, it's a shot at Arians. I think it's more a shot at Cutter, who, if you remember, he and Sean Payton were playing slappies, punching each other after the game on the field a few years ago. When they shook hands and wouldn't let go, and then they were slapping each other's chests. So that's part of it, I think. But Peyton Manning was on Denver radio, and we have the story up at joebucksfan.com. Just before the draft, he was talking, and he was being a little bit playful, but he was talking about Brady in Tampa and said, hey, you know, my old coaches are there. Bruce Arians was my quarterback coach, and, you know, when I had 28 interceptions, I'm sure he didn't put that in his book. I think he should take some responsibility for that. And, of course, you know, I know the fans make the big leaps, but Arians wasn't calling the plays. I mean, he was, bottom line, just a quarterback's coach. Peyton took his slaps there like, hey, maybe you're not the biggest whisperer you think you are. So, I don't know. I mean, Jameis is a big red X that I wrote on Arians' resume. And, you know, if Brady throws 15, 16 picks this year, we're going to know it's Arians related.
Hey, Lee, how dare Jeff Ireland suggest that Winston's going to learn more from Drew Brees than he did from Ryan Griffin? How dare he suggest that?
Or Blaine Gabbert.
Or Blaine Gabbert. How dare he? Guys, besides being an all-timer, I've got him as a top 10 all-time quarterback. Not everybody agrees with me. Yeah, Russo doesn't. But besides all that, Steve, the guy doesn't have a big ego. I think he went out of his way to tutor Mr. Bridgewater, and he's doing it with Taysom Hill, and he'll do it with Winston. It's not a case of, I don't expect Aaron Rodgers to welcome Love with open arms, but that's not the case in New Orleans. I think that just adds to Brees' resume. He's one of a kind. I think he's the most accurate quarterback we've ever seen. Now, look, he doesn't throw 45-yard bombs anymore with regularity, but he hasn't had the greatest receivers in the world, especially before Michael Thomas got to town. You know, he's one of those types, and I think he's going to do wonders for Winston.
All right, Ira, I wanted to say this about Jameis. There have been some rumors out there that Jameis had more money with the Steelers. All I'll say is a few weeks ago, Peter King, before this was even a thing, he was pitching Jameis to the Steelers, sort of writing that, oh, it's a perfect fit. Then he called the Steelers, and they told King, we have zero interest, and King wrote it up. Of course, things change. You don't know what's true and what's not. But I will say, if Jameis went to Pittsburgh, there would have been at least 2-3 stories saying, oh, you know, Roethlisberger was the original NFL sex offender, and here comes Jameis, and they can bond on that, and Pittsburgh knows how to handle those guys. And in New Orleans, no one's going to bring it up. And especially since Drew Brees is like the mayor of New Orleans and is so philanthropic, I think it's a better place for Jameis's image, because those stories aren't going to be out there And if they were offering him $500,000 more, it might be better for Jameis long term to have avoided that.
I tend to agree with that, but Lee, I'll throw this out there. To me, it's this X factor until we can fully determine what the heck's going on in the Crescent City. I just don't know what Sean Payton's long-term vision is for Taysom Hill. I mean, the guy's getting a lot of money. Lee, I understand he's a Swiss Army knife, but you can get Swiss Army knives for $1.99, Lee, not for $10 million. So you wonder, you know, is Hill still in the picture towards 2021 as Breeze's replacement? It's very murky what's going on with Peyton's vision for Hill.
I don't understand what his vision with this Hill character is. Nothing about me impresses him. Okay, he blocks a punt here and there. In the immortal words of Archie Bunker, whoop-de-doo. I mean, I want to see the guy put the Saints on his back and win a couple games like Bridgewater did. You know, I know he's so good. I noticed they didn't turn to him; they turned to Bridgewater when Breeze got hurt.
That's right.
So I'm really lukewarm on this guy, and I don't know. Maybe they share an agent. I don't know, but I just don't get the vision. Now, I read Tom Pelissero, NFL Network, is reporting that the NFL made an inquiry into Tom Brady walking into the wrong house, thinking he's at Byron Leftwich's abode, and the NFL has determined no violation, which will get Mike Florio bent. So he'll have an entire episode about that in tomorrow morning's Pro Football Talk on NBC Sports Network.
You're absolutely right, Lee. Absolutely right. He'll try to keep this thing going. Oh, the NFL is derelict in its duties, Mr. Isbitz. Derelict. I'm not surprised. I thought this thing would go away. And now the NFL is pushing it under the rug, with the exception of Mr. Florio, who we all have a lot of respect for.
Oh, yeah.
I think this matter is over and done with, Mr. Isbitz.
Well, that's good. I mean, I think it comes down to they realized there's nothing they can prove, so end of story right there.
Nothing they can prove. The guy's house he walked into is on TMZ.
No. I mean, there's nothing they could prove about what Brady was doing at Leftwich's house. Yeah, I mean,
maybe he wanted a cup of sugar over there, Lee. You never know.
Exactly. Yeah, some avocados. You ran out of avocados to make the ice cream. Now, Sage, I'm glad it's out of the way. I'm glad we brought it up on the last podcast. Of course, all of your podcasts are available to a free subscription: Apple Podcasts, Podbean, Google Play, Stitcher, lots of platforms where people listen. You get a free alert. You can leave a review. All that stuff. I wanted to throw this out at you before we wrap up and then head over to Sean Sullivan for some draft talk. And Ira, the Bucs have $4 million in salary cap left, one of the smallest numbers in the league. Based on what I was looking to sign the draft class, and when you subtract the players that come off the rolls to make the draft class, the Bucs probably need about $4 million net to sign the draft class. So they're out of money, zero. There's no cash whatsoever. And I would ask you if this team is good enough to win the Super Bowl. I know what you're going to tell me, but your thoughts on the cap and if the Bucs might want to make some moves outside of O.J. Howard, or if there's anyone else on the roster where they can kind of maybe open some things up if they want to get a guy with, you know, it's nice to have $5 million laying around in case somebody gets cut in August that really, you know, especially a safety that really tickles you.
If we've learned anything about the NFL, and I think the Saints are a prime example, Lee, if you want people, you can maneuver. You can massage the salary cap. Everybody does it, Lee. You got to cut somebody, you cut somebody. They're not cutting Levante David, you know, but somebody like Will Golston could be in trouble. Or, you know, for example, you never know. Lee, there's ways to do it. And if somebody pops open and the Bucs are interested, they're going to go to get them. Because the one thing that all three of us can agree on is it's all about 2020. The future be damned. Now, Lee, on the surface, that's a dangerous way to go. Dangerous. Because if you look around and you say, well, who the heck's going to be the Buck quarterback in 2022? It's wide open. You got no idea. But who cares? Who cares? It's all about this year. So, Lee, I don't think any Buck fan is upset about the fact that they're tight on salary cap money, Lee, after this off season. that we've never seen before, and one of the most dynamic off seasons in recent NFL history. Lee, damn the torpedoes and damn the salary cap.
Well, Ira, there's quite a few fans out there that they believe salary cap talks is nothing more than a Chinese hoax. You always find room for players, teams do it. They always bring up the Seahawks, who always seem to find some kind of money to sign someone. The slimy Saints always seem to find money to sign someone. So a lot of fans out there, salary cap's nonsense. And they don't want to hear about it when you write about salary cap. They absolutely don't want to hear about it. So you're on to something there, Ira. They don't want to hear about salary cap. Bucks have Brady. Bucks have Gronk. Super Bowl's in Tampa this year. Forget 2022. It's all about this year.
All right, Sage, as far as the cap goes, and you mentioned Pro Football Talk, from what I've heard, which is from you, Ira, the PFT live show on NBC Sports Network opened up with a brief thank you and discussion to JoeBucksFan.com, so that was interesting. We'll have to go back and look at that. But Mike Florio said what I said here just the other day. He said what I said a couple of weeks ago on the podcast, that the expectation is the salary cap will go down next year because of league revenue losses this year. However small they are, if it goes down 2-3%, it goes down. So salary cap at least will become a little bit more interesting in the short term this year, next year, because Chris Godwin's going to want to go from $700,000 to at least $16 million, and that's going to be the talk of how they pull that off next year, you know, especially with if there's still a team that's trying to pay Gronkowski and still be in a Super Bowl hunt.
You're right, Steve, but guys like Sue, even possibly Jason Pierre-Paul, could be gone. But, Lee, along those lines, you know, if you wanted to do that, Lee, even next year, and you still got Brady, Lee, they're not well fortified up front to be able to afford to cut JPP loose. At least the way I look at this roster, Lee, they don't have young guys other than Vita Vea up front. They're kind of stuck there.
This is more a conversation for Sean Sullivan than me, but only because I'm tired of getting people mad because I won't shut up about it. But when you refuse to draft a good running back and you refuse to draft a good edge rusher, you're painting yourself in a corner.
It's really an all-in year, Ira. It's really an all-in year. They've set it up that way. And, hey, it's exciting. We're just going to enjoy it because if they don't win this year, if they're not a winning record, we're all going to cry and reach a new level of misery, and we don't want that to happen, Sage. All right, let's head over to Bill Curry Ford. Let's get in the car, Ira. I'll sit in the back, and we'll talk to Sean Sullivan, and then we'll be back next week. As promised, we have moved up the road to Bill Curry Ford, draft guru Sean Sullivan, general manager. He's back on the podcast, and we're going to dive into these picks and some of the undrafted free agents on top of that, and we'll see where Mr. Sullivan sits on these guys and the draft overall. Sean, how are you?
I'm doing great, Steve. Thank you very much for having me on.
Dive right into it, Sean. Tristan Wirfs, now we've been through the pick. Fans have seen a lot about him on SportsCenter, and anybody who likes the draft is dialed into the first round. What did you think of the pick briefly, but also what did you think of the move as far as the way the Bucks handled the orchestration of that first round?
You know, that's a good question, Steve. You know, when I first, because I love the players so much, I love all the players, I wanted to draft everybody, and I know that's not possible. Tristan Wirfs, if you remember, Ira, when we first did our first mock draft, I brought him up as a Bucks pick. I talked about A.J. Espinosa out of Iowa and Tristan Wirfs, and you were like, what's with all the Iowa guys you're talking about, if you remember? That mock draft that we did. He was my favorite swing tackle in the draft. I thought he was the best at being able to play both sides. He actually plays four positions on the offensive line. A lot of people don't know that, and I know that we're going to like the ability to move him around just in case of injury, is to have a really terrific swing tackle. You know, he's 6'5", he's 322. You know, everyone talked about the 4.85 he ran in the 40. The 24 reps at 225. I mean, that's fantastic. The fact that he's a bulldozer in the run game, he gets low. He gets in the trenches. He struggles in pass protection on the left side, usually on the right side. Interesting stuff about him. He started as a true freshman at Iowa. He's the first person to do that in 20 years. State wrestling champion. I think he's going to be the starter from day one at right tackle. Just like you said, Steve, there's going to be no playing around. This guy's going to be starting at right tackle. My only thought on this was we lost a fourth-round draft pick. to trade up one spot with San Francisco. And listen, it's legitimate. I 100% believe that it was possible that we were going to lose him if we didn't trade up. So
Miami might have done it, Sean. Miami might have done it.
I know Miami liked him. So I'm going to go and say, listen, I understand why we did what we did. I don't think it was panic, and I think that Jason Light did an excellent job based on his board. My thought was, I knew that the 49ers, they traded into that 13th spot before the draft, and then they made no, you know, they weren't hiding the fact that they wanted to draft Kinlaw, right? So you knew that that was going to be a pretty easy pick.
Yeah, they wanted the replacement for
right.
Buckner.
DeForest Buckner, right.
And this guy, man, you know how much I love John Lynch, Ira. I mean, my goodness, the guy's phenomenal.
He's phenomenal.
Anyway, he's going to make the Hall of Fame as the general manager, too. I mean, the guy's just phenomenal. But I not to go long on John Lynch, but he did a fantastic job. My only thought was, why not trade down out of that spot? Because I like Isaiah Wilson. I think he's going to be an elite right tackle. He's not a swing tackle, so depending on what they're doing with Donovan Smith next year, which we don't know what they're doing, but based on this pick, it's possible that they're going to play Donovan this year and replace him next year with Tristan. But I thought the way the draft fell, I was like, okay, we could trade down, still get a pass rusher, and then we could go and get Isaiah Wilson, which ended up, as you guys noticed, came into the first round. Everybody had him in a third round grade, and I told you that I thought he was the best right tackle in the draft when we talked about it. I thought he was one of the most underrated guys, five-star recruit out of Georgia. I thought he was phenomenal, and he ended up sneaking into the first round, which I was really proud of that pick, because I thought right now everybody's watching tape, and they're not getting fooled by interviews, and they're not getting fooled by pro days.
And I want our listeners to not forget, Sean Sullivan is the guy that came on this podcast 2 weeks ago and said Ruggs is the best receiver in this draft. Ruggs is the best receiver prospect in this draft. Most pundits didn't agree with Sean Sullivan. When the draft ended, Ruggs was the first wide receiver taken. So I want that out there. But Sean, here's my question. Two parts. One, by all the reports, and it's not speculation, there are quotes from Dave Caldwell. Jason Light was willing and eager to give up a 3 and a 4 to move to the number 9 spot. Two questions. One, do you agree with me that that would have been a very foolish move? And two, who do you think Light would have taken at 9? Which tackle? And the only one that was gone was Thomas at that point. So I'm not sure it would have been worse, Sean. What do you think?
Okay, first part of the question is, I don't want to trade up ever. I'm a trade down guy. I'm a draft guy. So as you know, you have a better chance of hitting on guys when you draft more guys. I mean, that's the New England Patriots. Bill Belichick trades down. In this draft, Bill Belichick has now traded down out of the first round. I believe he's tied for the most in NFL history for trade downs because he likes to add picks because he knows this is not an exact science. Right? So the more picks you get, the better chance you have of having starters and depth. But no, I would not have traded up. I think that 100% he was going after Wills because Wills was probably number one on our board.
I agree with you. I think it was Wills. I think it was Wills.
I think that that was his number one tackle. And then when he saw him drop and, you know, the Giants went with Thomas, which Thomas is going to be terrific for the Giants. But as far as the right tackle's position, I don't think you could have done better than Wills at that position. And, you know, and Isaiah Wilson went to Tennessee. But you're right. I think it was Wills. And listen, at the end of the day, we got Tristan Wirfs. He was my number one swing tackle on my board, on my personal board, which I love the comments from Joe Buck's fan. It's like, hey, you know, why is a car guy giving this football advice? But I love that stuff. Please continue to comment on it. I have passions in my life. I am very passionate about my job, and I'm very passionate about my hobby, which has been my hobby since I was a little boy, right? So I've watched the draft and followed the Bucks since 1976. So I think, if anything, I'm a novice, but I think I know more than most people that are novices. And I think you guys can back me up on that.
Sean, it's kind of like Ira. He can't cook, but he's an expert in food. It's, you know what I mean?
Well, yeah, absolutely. And you know what? We're going to have the Ira coffee and beet salad at the new Big Storm Brewery that's going to be open on May 1st. So that's going to be great.
That's fantastic. Fantastic.
All right. But I can't argue with the pick. And just to get back to what you said, Tristan Wirfs is going to be a day one starter at right tackle.
Round two. Here comes the Bucks. And a lot of fans, you know, shaking their head, wondering, are they going to do the old round two safety again or defensive back again like they've done many times through many regimes? And here comes the Bucks, and they grab Antoine Winfield Jr., safety out of Minnesota. What did you think of the pick at the time? What did you think an hour later? What do you think right now?
Okay, so you know how I felt going into the draft. I basically told you and Ira and Lee, please let them not draft a safety, right? Please. I don't want to see them draft a safety, but they did because I wanted to sign a veteran. And then they ended up drafting the guy that I thought was the best safety in the draft. If you were going to draft a guy, why don't you draft a ball hawk? Draft a guy that plays with swag. I mean, this is a guy that talks on the field. He has a lot of confidence. He's a lockdown safety that he can cover, super physical. You know, he's 5'9", not 5'8". A lot of people were reporting that he was 5'8". I don't want to take that from him. He's 5'9". He's got a syndrome about his height. You can tell by when he talks. He ran a 4.45.
How come you like him over McKinney, Sean?
Like McKinney and some of those bigger school safeties. And, you know, I was down on McKinney and I was down on Delpit at LSU. And, you know, going into the draft, I would say a month before the draft, before the virus, and you would have had pro days, you know, on this. I think that you would have seen that Antoine was much more explosive than Delpit and McKinley. You know what? We don't need a big run stopper at this point. What we need is a cover safety who can also take the ball away. And I felt like no one did that better than this gentleman. No one. You know, his NFL comparison is Buda Baker. And, you know, obviously everybody has talked about Honey Badger as well, and that's for the size. But I'm telling you, this guy is a first-round pick had he not had the injuries. And I think a lot of people in the NFL feel that way. I just didn't want to draft a safety. But I guess if we're going to draft a safety, it was either going to be Antoine Winfield for me or it was Jeremy Chinn who went to the Carolina Panthers.
Who did you want them to take at number 45, Sean?
Dobbins. It's a different philosophy, Ira. We know right now that the Bucs do not value pass rush and they do not value running back. I mean, that's just what it is. They don't value them. They're not high on their board. Jason Light came out and said, listen, we had Winfield Jr. rated higher on our board than Dobbins. Well, I find that hard to believe when Dobbins is going to see the ball much more than Winfield, I hope, that he's going to be active on more plays, and that he makes that much of a difference in your offense. I don't know why they don't value this position. I don't. John Harbaugh, and what does he do? He has Mark Ingram in the number one rushing offense in the NFL last year, and then he takes Dobbins.
Excellent point, because I just read a quote yesterday from Eric DaCosta, GM of the Ravens, and they asked him about Dobbins, and he said, he's too good a player. We have to take him. Sort of regardless of need, you got to take him, and I think that's exactly what Sean's saying.
I mean, obviously they have a tremendous track record. It's really the turning point of the draft in so many ways, because if the Bucks make that pick, and we talked about this, Sean, you talked about this when you were on before the draft, Dobbins would have been the final all-in piece, the final all-in move for this season when the Bucks hope to score 32, 33 points a game and just blow away the rest of the league. But they didn't do it. They went to the defense. I was disappointed just on the all-in front.
So, and you know what we talked about? It wasn't because I didn't want to draft the safety. It's because I didn't want to go into this season with a rookie safety at nickel. That's what I didn't want. We went through it last year. We had rookies last year on the backside, right?
Right.
I just didn't want to do it this year. You know, Dobbins to me was much higher player to me than Winfield. Although I can't really argue with Jason Light. If it's higher on his board, the guy can play. The injury history is a problem. He missed two seasons. I mean, two seasons in college, and you know what Bill Parcells said. If you don't stay healthy in college, you're not going to stay healthy in the pros.
Here's a factor. And you know what? I'm not sure the Bucks are wrong if they think this way, Sean, in terms of the running game. And I've made this point. With Wirfs and Gronkowski, and let's not forget about Gronkowski, in terms of the run game and the holes and the blocking, Sean, is it fair for Jason Light and Arians to think, hey, with that kind of an upgrade, with a road grader at right tackle, and Gronkowski has few peers as a blocking tight end, we're going to get, you know, 1,100 yards out of Ronald Jones. I mean, Sean, they might be thinking that way.
No, that's very fair, Ira. That's a great point, and I have to agree with him. I understand what they're doing. I love the fact that I can actually see a plan, because, you know, as we talked about, is please just have a plan. Whether I agree with it or not is irrelevant as a fan, but just have one. What you said is hits it right on the head, Ira. They don't value the running back at that position because they believe that Rojo is going to have an 1,100-yard season behind Wirfs and Gronk. That's the only feasible explanation. And then the fact that they probably had Winfield as a middle first-round pick.
They had a big grade on Winfield, Sean. No question.
Right.
No question.
And everybody did.
And like Sean said, a lot of people did. I mean, many mock drafts. He's in there late first round, 22, yes. 23. So it was probably the way they saw Winfield is probably a lot the way Baltimore saw Dobbins.
That's right.
The one thing that scares me about this pick is 2 years of missing football. And then we have another safety that we drafted in the second round, Evans, who's had a foot injury now for 2 seasons in a row, and Winfield had a foot injury 2 seasons in a row. So, yep. I mean, feet are pretty important for that position.
Feet are important, and so are tires, which you can get at Bill Curry Ford, the service department. Summer's coming. You got to get the best deals at Bill Curry Ford. Sean will take care of you, as always. You can always go say hello to him, even if you're just getting service done and you're not shopping for a new or used vehicle with their nationwide lifetime warranty. You can just go say hello to Sean and build a lifetime relationship with Bill Curry Ford. All right, Sean, third round, Keyshawn Vaughn, that's the pick. That's the guy that we've got. And what do you like about him? Start on the positive side. What do you like about him? What makes you encouraged?
I did a ton of research on Keyshawn. The only thing I know about Vaughn is watching him play against the Gators, you know, in the SEC, and he didn't have terrific games against the Gators, right? So, you know, I had to go back and do a bunch of research on him because he wasn't in my top 7 running backs, right? So I was like, man, I didn't do a lot of research on him. But he did play in the SEC. He's 5'10", 214, and he's really compact for his size. He's very muscular. So he runs low to the ground. I like that. Everybody talked about his 40 time because he didn't have a pro day, but he did run a 4.5 on his only time that he ran for the 40. But that what I was trying to understand is he was a high school state champion 100 meter runner. If you're a state champion in the 100 meter, you're fast. So I don't know if he would have ran better at his pro day, because I think he probably would have been a sub 4.5 guy. He probably would have run a 4.47. And that would have really helped his drafts. I know that doesn't mean a lot, but for whatever reason, that 4.4 means a lot different than a 4.5. But I think when you put pads on, it doesn't really matter.
Does he make Sean? Does he make a lot of people miss? Does he have that cutback ability?
He does not. He puts his head down. He looks for contact. He doesn't have quick feet. He's not going to be able to make. Dobbins could create his own hole because he can stop and start, which is, you know, if you ever watch the 3-cone drill, that's what it's about. It's very interesting. He's going to be very methodical in following his blocks. He's going to need a zone scheme. He's going to need to know where he's going to be. He's not going to be able to go through the line the first. He did have 8 touchdowns of 60-plus yards, which was the most of any player in the FBS. So when they talk about, hey, he's slow, I don't think he's slow. I don't know how you can sit there and say a guy is slow when he's a 100-meter champion and he had 8 touchdowns of 60-plus yards. And I don't think he has a lot of shake to him, and that's what you were saying, Ira. I think he's going to be a terrific third down back as far as getting the 1 or 2 yards. He's going to be a great goal line back. He had 86 touchdowns in high school, which was a school record. He was nicknamed the Red Mamba, which I think is pretty cool. If you're really into the draft, I really like that. I think he's a compliment to Rojo. I think Rojo is definitely the starter, and I think this gentleman is just going to be a compliment.
I see him as a faster version of Peyton Barber.
You know what? They have very similar running styles. How many times did you see Peyton Barber put his head down when he was running?
Absolutely.
Instead of keeping his head up, he put his head down because he was initiating contact because he can't go left or right. He's a north-south runner.
And he leaned forward. He leaned forward.
Here's the thing that's interesting, okay? So I did a lot of research on this guy, and you know what you can't find is, you know, they talked about We wanted somebody with good hands. The guy's got good hands. He had 28 catches. He'll be fine. I don't know anything about his route running, but here's the one thing. How many times do you think he fumbled in his entire career? All the carries that he had at Illinois and Vanderbilt.
I think I saw that. It was just one, right?
Eight.
He fumbled twice in his entire career. So as far as running backs are concerned, as far as the highest rating running backs, he had the least amount of fumbles per carry.
That's a big difference from Jonathan Taylor, Sean. Big difference.
Yes. Don't you think that the fact that he only fumbled twice played into the fact that Bruce Arians is trying to limit his turnovers? Like between Brady and holding on to the ball, we're trying to be somewhere where the playoff teams were, and your Super Bowl champion was 13 turnovers.
No question about it. Now, Sean, quick question. Do you think the Bucs would have had a tough call, yes or no, if Clyde Edwards-Helaire had been there at 45? Would they have stuck with Winfield, or would he have taken?
Yes, they don't value the running back position, Ira. They would have.
Ira, I thought that was interesting. The Red Mamba, I know back in Brooklyn you were called the Red Zeppeli. All right, Sage. All right, Ira. Now, look, Sean, I'm going to divert you a little bit here because we're talking running backs. Let's go to the seventh round guy, Raymond Calais, Louisiana Lafayette. Tremendous production at that level in college. Very quick.
Described as a human joystick, Steve. Human joystick.
And of course, Bruce Arians called him a faster, smaller David Johnson. Give me your 90 seconds on Calais.
All over the internet, it had him at 4.42. He's actually timed at 4.35 twice by the laser. So he ran a 4.35.40, which makes him the fastest running back. Then he was 5'8", 188, which I read a bunch of stuff about how he's too small to go between the tackles. He bench pressed 225 20 times. 20 times. That is incredible for a running back. Typically, they're 12, 13. He benched 20 times. This guy is strong. He had two TDs as kickoff returner. How many times do you think he fumbled in his career? I'm going to go back to this again, and I'm seeing a theme here with our draft picks. He fumbled one time in his entire career. He was used as a receiver, by the way, not as a receiver out of the backfield, but he was actually lined up as a receiver to work in space. I think he's going to compete for a kick returner. Until I see him actually on the field taking hits from NFL people, I'm going to have a tough time understanding, is he a player that can make this team?
Like any small school running back, you got to see him. You got to see him on the field. And hopefully, fingers crossed, we'll have a preseason, because that's where a guy like that is going to get a lot of opportunity to show that he can stand out. And like you said, take some hits, 10, 12
hits
in a game.
But he only fumbled one time.
Yeah.
So you drafted a running back that fumbled twice in his career and a running back that fumbled once in his career.
It's a great point on the fumbling theme. And I think it's one that's worth exploring, Ira. How about that? I think we'll dive into that a little bit more. All right, Sean, fourth round, no picks, because those were traded away.
Deepest draft in 10 years, and we don't have any picks in the fourth round. It's very frustrating, but go ahead.
Tyler Johnson, Minnesota receiver, talented guy, streaky guy, not the most consistent guy, not the fastest guy, which is probably why he was in the fifth round, in addition to all the depth at receiver. What do you like about Tyler Johnson and how he might compare to Justin Watson, who is faster, bigger, stronger, and came on late last year, as well as Scotty Miller, who's a different type of receiver?
Oh, very different. You know, this kind of turned the draft around for me. Man, those first three picks, and I was like, you know what? They're all solid picks, but there was nothing. The draft was so deep, and sometimes I get caught up, Steve, to be honest. We look at our players, and we're going to judge Jason Light on the draft players that he picked, right? We don't usually judge a general manager by the picks that he doesn't pick. And I'm one of those guys that happens to know who's on the board, and I actually pay attention, who's on the board and what's the value of this pick. I know it's a good pick. So I was very frustrated after the first three rounds, but this is where the draft started to really turn around for me. In the fifth round, this guy, Tyler Johnson, I knew of him, obviously, from 18, the previous year. You know, he was a second round grade the previous year, and his coach talked him into coming back. I don't know if you saw that. B.J. Fleck was talking about he cried, and then Tyler Johnson was going to stay for another year. I mean, that was a very emotional article if you read it, because that's how special of a player he thought Tyler Johnson was. This guy ran a 4.5 unofficial. The only thing I could find on it was on Draft Scout. But I know you don't like DPF, or I know Lee doesn't like DPF, but he was the highest rated slot receiver in the draft out of all receivers. Pro Football Focus, and not to mention the fact more receivers were drafted in this draft than in the history of the NFL. I don't know if you saw that, but I was looking to see what happened his senior year, why he fell so much. And again, this is the problem you have when these guys don't have pro days. He has no 40 time. He wasn't invited to the Senior Bowl, right? He got very mad that he didn't get invited to the Senior Bowl. He was invited to the East West Shrine Game, which, as you know, if you do well at the East West Shrine Game, they take you to the Senior Bowl, right? He would have had more eyes on him. This guy walked away from the East West Shrine Game. You know, that if I was his agent, I'd be like, you got to be crazy. You got to get out there with those boys and show them what you can do. You know, instead, he decided to stay home on his tape.
Sean, explain to me how a guy with that kind of productivity is still lurking there in the fifth round. Sean, it doesn't make any sense to me.
It makes perfect sense, Ira, because the virus got this kid, right? So if this kid had a regular pro day and he ran less than a 4.7, this guy's drafted in the third round. All day long, twice on Sunday. You have no idea what this guy's speed is. You have no – the only unofficial time, he did a 4.5 40 unofficial time. And that's just based on the tape. You know, they watch tape and they can kind of judge how fast you are. The guy is can catch the 50-50 balls. You know, Arians, you know the story. Everybody knows the story about Arians seeing him at the bowl game. And, he caught 200 yards and he was all over the field. Everybody knows that game. Here's something that's interesting. He tied for receptions, but all-time Minnesota. Now, Minnesota's had some good receivers, NFL receivers. He leads Minnesota in TDs and 100-yard games in their history. He had 16 100-yard games in his career at Minnesota, which is
phenomenal. That's a big number.
I'm comparing him to Anquan Boldin. I think that's his NFL comparison.
Physical.
50-50 ball, runs great routes. But Bolden ran a 4.71 at the combine, and that 4.7 number is why he dropped. He had all that production at Florida State, but he dropped, right, because of that 4.7 time. He's 6'1", 220, and Tyler Johnson's 6'1", 206. And I think Tyler Johnson's a faster receiver than Anquan Boldin, just based on what I can see. But I think that's what Bruce Arians sees in him. He sees his Boldin. I think he beats out Scotty Miller, and I love Justin Watson. You guys both know how much I like Justin Watson, but I think Tyler is going to be on the outside. I think that sometimes they'll move Godwin outside and put Tyler in the slot.
All right, I want to remind everybody this, we're talking to Sean Sullivan, our friend, our draft guru, general manager of Bill Curry Ford, Tampa's first family of Ford, and Sean has promised us that Tyler Johnson is not the next Kenny Bell, Ira. So
he is not.
You know, Kenny Bell was very productive, fifth round pick, Jason Light, but it was the apple of his eye. And, the draft is just fun because, no matter what, with these seven guys the Bucs drafted, we're going to have a few flops. I'm hoping there are none. But, Tyler Johnson, it's exciting because, look, the guy can play.
Sean, sometimes they overthink this stuff with the 40 time.
Like, I tell you what, if they ever hire me as a scout, I promise you I will certify my picks and you guys can all see them. You just watch tape. It's not rocket science. These guys are who they are on the field, and something happens to these scouts. They try to get like tricky, and these general managers they try to be too fancy. Just draft the guys that are productive in college, and then confirm that they can run and catch, and go with it. I mean, I just think they overthink it, Ira.
Sean, for the sake of time, we're not going to get too much into Chapel Russell out of Temple, the other seventh round pick. At the end of the day, this year, he's going to be a special teams guy at best. So,
yes.
And he's more of a developmental player. So let's go to the sixth round where Khalil Davis, the defensive tackle from Nebraska, 8 sacks last year, is more of an interesting talent. I'm curious to see what you think of him.
So I didn't study him before the draft. I've spent a lot of hours studying him since. I watched all of his tape. One of the things that stood out to me was not just the 40 time. So I watched his, I did know about his 40 time because I'm probably the only guy in the world that watches the NFL Combine 4 times. I watched the whole thing 4 times through. I stop, I take notes, I love that stuff. Here's the thing I didn't see was he did the bench press 32 times. Just to give you, for instance, Ira, 32 times is probably 32 times more than you could do 225, right? So That's a lot of time for 225. 32.
I can't lift a big storm of beer. Yeah, 32 times.
You'd be fine, Byron. You get the bar up. I'm sure. You do good. You know, everybody knows about the first step. I mean, they've talked about it, and they talked about his pass rushing. Here's the thing. After watching him, he cannot take on any type of double team. He played out of position at Nebraska. They played him on the end. They rushed him off the end. They moved him a little bit to tackle. I think that the problem is going to be the fact that he measured in the lowest percentile in arm length. And for a defensive tackle, as you know, when you get engaged, you got to have long arms to get out of those tackles to take on multiple offensive linemen. I think that he's going to be a tackle that's going to be like a third down specialist. If you're going to take somebody out of the game, he's going to have somebody really strong next to him, like Vea, who's going to take a double team, or Sue. I think he'll spell one or the other for plays during the game, but I think he's going to be a part-time player for depth. I don't think you're going to see a lot of snaps out of him.
Yeah, he's not somebody who's going to bolster the run game by any stretch.
No, he's actually not going to be good in the running game. He did have a lot of tackles for loss. But, you know, if you watch those tackles for loss, he's on the outside. And, you know, they play a very similar defense to Todd Bowles at Nebraska. So he's not going to have to learn a ton about what we're doing. Like, he's going to know, but he's going to play on the inside. He's not going to play on the outside.
All right, Sean, before we hit on just a few of the undrafted free agents, what's your favorite deal right now at BillCurryFord.com? What is there that excites you most on the website that someone can take a look at?
Well, the remaining 2019s, they're going so fast, Steve, as I told you. Our deals have not slowed down. We've had our customers are still coming in. They're buying cars. Nothing is off for us. And it's hard for people to believe, but if they come in the showroom, their showroom's full. And we're still following the CD guidelines. If you've been to our showroom, it's 100 yards wide. It's a football field wide. So we have plenty of room for you to come in, but you'll see a lot of people here. I mean, they're coming in for the 0 at 84 on the 19s, and they're getting the payments deferred, and that's going to end very soon because the 19s are going to be gone. It's not available in the 2020s, Steve. So whatever dealerships have left in 19s, you're getting 84 for 0, and you're getting 6 months deferred.
And that's 0% financing, 84
no
months.
Interest.
No interest, 0%, 84 months. That's 7 years for you, Ira, in case you got your pen and paper out. And, you know, it's an exciting offer.
It's an amazing offer. Like I said, the best offer we had before this was after September 11th. You know, our business stopped after the attack in New York. And then in October of that year, in 01, was the first time that 0% was introduced. And we did 0% for 60 months. And it really kept all the businesses across the country going during that downtime. We were able to keep everybody employed, where everybody was making the ability to pay their bills, which was really terrific. And we sold the most cars in our history in October of 2001. So basically, you come back to this where we have the virus hit. Ford comes out with 84 at zero, and it's basically had the same effect. We have sold through so many cars that we would normally have for the next 6 months. We're going to be very limited on inventory for the next over the summer. So right now is the best deal. If you're going to buy a car in the next 6 months and you want to defer those payments and you want to pay no interest, you cannot wait. You have to come now if you want to be able to select one of those vehicles. When the 20s are all that's left, Ford will change their incentives, I assure you. It will not be available.
Sure. All right, that's BillCurryFord.com, and the dealership's just 1 mile north of the stadium on the east side. So easy to get to, easy to park. Tremendous pre-owned inventory as well, Bill Curry Ford. Ira, I wanted to remind you, just in case you forgot, and I thought this was a great, great situation for Jason Light. Two picks before Tyler Johnson, the Patriots took a kicker, so it really relieved a lot of stress from Light and probably set the draft up for the Bucks very nicely there.
Hey, you're only half kidding, because Sean will agree with me that whenever camp starts, whether it's August, September, whenever, Sean, you and I are going to training camp, and the first thing we're going to look at is, do they bring anybody in to compete against Gay? And if they don't, we're going to raise holy hell.
Yeah, Tom Brady's not going to let that happen. Tom Brady never had a bad kicker in his entire career. He's not going to start now.
Sean, your favorite undrafted free agent, the one guy to watch on the defensive side of the ball?
If I had to pick one, I'm going to go with Mike Divinity at LSU. We actually got an SEC player in a draft where most people drafted SEC players. For those of you who watched LSU football, everybody knows who this gentleman is. He's a linebacker. He played outside. He played inside. He played edge. He's 6'2", 242. He ran a 4.85. Here's the interesting thing. His arm length is that of a 6'6" defensive end. So he had one of the largest wingspans for his size in the NFL draft. He had 5.5 sacks playing alongside Devin White the prior year because he played at the 3-4 edge. He had a fourth round grade coming into the draft, and we signed him as a UFA because he had some maturity issues that got him suspended during his senior year. He started on the national championship team. He was a five-star recruit coming out of high school. Here's the interesting thing. When have you ever seen the Bucs sign a free agent that was the number one prospect in his position in the country? He was. He was the number one outside line prospect in the country when he came to LSU. And then he started and played with Devin White, which, you know, obviously they know each other well. So if he's past the maturity issues, this guy could be somebody who makes the team and contributes right away. You know, as a special teamer and a guy that's going to sub, but
That's an exciting. That sounds exciting. Certainly, there, Ira. What do you think?
I think linebacker depth is an issue. I mean, Kevin Minter's back. I think he's going to get every opportunity. Like Sean said, if he gets his act together, there will be a job for him if he performs.
All right, Sean. Offensive side of the ball of all these undrafted free agents, who's caught your eye?
Can I say one more defensive end?
Sure.
Just because he played with Vita Vea. So this Benning Patoas guy out of Washington, this 6'3", 290, he's a massive run stopper. And he played with Vita Vea. So we signed him, obviously. He has some potential as some depth on the defensive line. Not a pass rusher, but he's big. And he's Polynesian. So he was actually up for the Polynesian Football Player of the Year. And he's a tremendous run stopper. He was at Washington. We just signed him off the street. I mean, I think that there's a chance that he could take that Bo Allen spot, you know, because that's what Bo Allen was here for, is to be big and take up the middle and take
What's that
reps.
Name again?
So his first name is Benning, and his last name is Patoa. P-O-T-O-A apostrophe E. So I think it's Patoa.
Gotcha.
I'm not quite sure.
He sounds like that perfect lost pro day guy where they couldn't really tell what kind of speed or lateral.
He had no pro day. You're
no lateral
right.
quickness, what he's got there, and... And if he looks slow on tape, then they weren't going to, nobody was going to draft him. So, hey, maybe they talked to Vea, and here we go. All right, so offensive side of the ball, who do you like?
Offensive side. So we only signed one quarterback, this Reed Sinnett kid out of San Diego. He's 6'4", 229. He has a very strong arm. He only started one season, but he threw for 65%, 33 touchdowns, and only 13 interceptions. Here's the interesting thing. He was recruited by Harvard and Penn, two Ivy League schools. So you know that Jason Light likes him. He likes his Harvard guys. But New England, Bill Belichick tried to sign him, and we actually had to steal him away from New England and pay and guarantee him some of his signing bonuses to have him sign, according to the article that I read. It was a very interesting article.
Nice.
So we signed several wide receivers. There's one, this Josh Pearson kid out of Jacksonville State. He's 6'4", 205. He ran a 4.45. He was a Walter Payton finalist. He was a first-team All-American, and he caught 17 TDs his senior year, which tied for the college football league. And then you're going to go, Ira's going to go, well, why didn't this guy get drafted? Well, Jacksonville State, I mean, I don't know how many scouts are going to Jacksonville State, but this could be a guy that, you know, that's a special teams guy that we put on the practice squad because he needs to work on his hands a little bit. So as far as the offensive line, because we need some depth, we did sign a guard out of Boise State. He was a three-year starter. His name is John Molchan, 6'5", 309, big guy. He started at left guard, and he plays three positions on the offensive line. So he's one of those guys that Jason Light's going to like because he has a lot of versatility. He might be a guy that can stick and also be a practice squad player for development.
But, gotcha. I can already hear Ira, Sean. He's not saying anything, but I can already hear him saying, do you know how many of these OTA, undrafted wide receivers that have run across my desk in the last 67 years. You know, and they get to camp and they suck. But no, it's okay. That's football. Sean, it has been so much fun to dive deeper into the draft with you. And, I think we might even have to do it again, especially if we have a supplemental draft this year, which would be like no other, which they're projecting if college football is canceled or delayed. That would be interesting.
That would be great. The supplemental draft is going to be big. I mean, they're talking about as many as 10 players could be in it, is what I read last night.
And you already have a scouting report on all of them, Sullivan.
Some of them, Ira. Not all of them. Some of them are, again, small school guys. Like, you wouldn't believe how many hours is spent trying to get information on somebody from a school that you typically don't hear about. You know, so there's just not a lot of information on some of these kids. And then those pro days are so important, and I feel bad. You know, this was their one shot, and they literally didn't get a chance to showcase themselves. And especially, and Steve, you know this more than anybody, when you have a big-time recruit, it's, say, you know, a school like that's not very well-known, say San Diego State, there's usually one guy a scout will go look at, and then they'll go there and they'll write down some other names on the pro day, say, oh, okay, that guy showed me something I didn't know about that guy. He writes them down. Then he starts scouting them, and then they fall in love with them, and then they sign him as a free agent.
Right.
They didn't get that this year.
No, it's really the wild card of the draft, and Sean, we appreciate it, and so excited by everything you're doing down at Bill Curry Ford. I'm glad you got to tell us about it. Very quick story, Ira, and then we'll let you give your final address. Great story told by Ali Marpet. When he was at Hobart didn't have a pro day. And it's typical with these Division III schools, if you have a guy from a Division III school, he gets invited to the nearby Division I school to be a part of their pro day, just as a courtesy thing. And so Ali Marpet was hoping to go to Syracuse, not too far from Hobart, and Syracuse wouldn't allow him to participate in the pro day because the head coach said, you're going to make our guys look bad. We don't have much of a draft class. You can't go. Which is just kind of a funny little anecdote. Sage, what do you want to say to Sean as you bid farewell to all the great Bucks fans?
All right. Well, one thing Sean hasn't touched on is taking the wider view. Sean, I want to know if you agree with me that let's give the NFL a little bit of due here, Sean. Some people didn't even think they should proceed with the draft on time. Not only did they do it, Sean, but they pulled it off, I thought, in fantastic style. I don't know how you thought it was handled watching it, but I thought there were some elements that were better than the glitz and the glamour that usually accompany the draft. So, Sean, I say hats off to the NFL. What do you say?
I thought it was fantastic, Ira. I loved it. I felt like it was such a personal touch seeing these men with their families and seeing them drafted. I felt like it brought a whole new dimension because you normally see just the first round. You see the first round. I get to watch round after round of these young men getting drafted and their dreams coming true and seeing the parents and the family. I loved it. It just added so much. And right now, I needed this draft.
That's right.
I need sports. I've heard all the people, the detractors say, well, we shouldn't be doing this because people are dying. That's the reason why we should be doing it. We need positive things in our life right now amongst all the negative things. You can't just dwell on the negative. We need positive things. And sports, for my whole life, even as a Bucks fan, it has brought me such great joy. And I after that draft was over, I was so just excited to have it. And it was just really great and it was more intimate. And I felt like I was part of the draft the way they did it. They just did such a great job.
Ira, what's for dinner tonight?
Lamb chops. Potato salad, a little spetzel, and some applesauce, young man, and a salad. And Cosmo's going to get whatever falls off our plate. He's going to scarf it up.
All right, get out of here, Ira. Next week on the podcast, you'll tell us what spetzel is. I don't even know what that is.